544. Actually, we got the page 546. What is this? 546. Yosef ben Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim Omer. Yosef ben Yochanan from Yerushalayim Ish Yerushalayim says the following. Ye beitcha pasoch lebocha. Your home should be open wide. Excuse me. Viyu anim b'nei beitcha. Poor shall be the members of your home. Vel tar besicha emisha. Do not over engage in conversation with the woman. Now, ha'isha could either mean the woman or it could mean a woman. Be'ishto amru. This was said regarding one's wife. Kal v'chomer be'ishas chavero, and all the more so regarding somebody else's wife. Mikan amru chachamim, based on this, the chachamim say, kol hamar besicha ima isha, one who overindulges in conversation with a woman, gorim ra la'atzmo, he causes all sorts of problems for himself. Both told me divrei Torah, he wastes time from Torah. B'sofo yorish gehenim, in the end he goes to gehenim. Right? So, the Mishnah comes along and says, don't overindulge in conversation with a woman. Now, it doesn't say don't talk to women. It says don't overindulge. Right? There is talking, and there is over-talking. There is doing something, and there is overindulging. Right? Comes along the Mishnah says, don't overindulge in conversation with a woman. Now, the basic idea here is that, and this is where we differ from the Western world. We don't differ, we're just wanting to admit the truth, right? It doesn't take much to get in trouble with women. And therefore, it starts with talking, right? It starts with talking, and it leads to other things. And therefore, as a result, the Mishnah says, keep a distance. This is where we are most vulnerable. We are willing to admit the truth that this is the area of life where we are most vulnerable. And therefore, it is worthwhile living with some sort of restraint. Now, with your own wife, it is worthwhile, because you will find when you get married that it's such a problem for Westerners, because we've been indoctrinated with this idea that all the movies end with they fall in love and live happily ever after, and they go for a walk on the beach or whatever it is they do. But they never show you what happens the next day. They never show you 6 months down the line when they're married and they can't figure out how they're paying the bills, or when the washing machine breaks, or when she looks like heck, right? They never show you. They just show you everybody at their best. They never show you people at their worst, which is why in that world they're running a more than 50% divorce rate, right? Because the infatuation and the superficiality, which is what people get married based on, is very short lasting, it's very temporary, it's very artificial, and as a result, people get divorced. That's why the world looks like it does. Comes along with this, even in your own relationship, even in a relationship with your own wife, the idea that absence makes the heart grow fonder is true. Because even in a relationship with your wife, the relationship with your wife can be a great relationship. But like anything else in life, you get tired of anything. Which is why the Torah relationship is a relationship to make sure you don't get tired of. On a physical level, there are the laws of Nida which are enforced separation, so that a husband and wife are forced to separate for half the month, so that their physical relationship does not become boring and stale. And there is the communication end of it, which is the Torah telling you more is not necessarily better. Talk to your wife, and then get busy, get on with your life. If you and your wife have goals, and the goal is for you to do as many mitzvahs as possible and to grow as much in Torah and mitzvahs, so the goal is for a Jewish man to come home, eat supper, talk to your wife, and then go off to the basement and go to the doctor and make sure to learn Torah. Go do something with your life. Don't sit around the house watching TV, and don't sit around the house telling your wife your opinion on every subject under the sun, and don't sit around making each other crazy. Get off and do something productive with your life. Your wife should be your partner in achievement, not just somebody to spend time with for the sake of spending time together. On the other hand, you have an obligation to talk to your wife, right? Under your obligations, you have to make your wife happy, you have to keep her happy, and you have to pay attention to her, and you have to give her attention if she needs attention. And when a wife says she wants to talk, that means when she wants to talk to you, that means she wants to talk and you should listen. And therefore, you don't need to say anything, and you don't need to say a whole lot anyway, right? That is the Pirkei Avos is telling you. Then the Mishnah says,
Where is your Torah with your wife?
Your territory, and you have to be normal. You have to be normal about these things. You have to be very normal about it. You have a regular, chatty relationship with your wife. The Mishnah didn't say that. That's part of the relationship. Part of the relationship, how's the wife go for a walk, and you talk about one thing, you talk about something else, things come up, you talk about the kids, you talk about neighbors, talk about this, talk about that, talk about where you're going to find money to raise, to marry off those kids, you know, all the things that come up, you know, talk about the color of the sky, talk about TV, talk about anything you want to talk about. Don't overdo it. There's a line, enough, you know, okay, not that you say, okay, everything like that is no different than eating food. Or at a certain point, you know, I could eat more if I wanted to, but you know, at a certain point, you know, you don't have to buy a candy bar every time you go past the store. I could afford it. You know, it's all a question of measuring things out and not overindulging. No.
But should you definitely not talk about it with your wife?
Oh. You do never talk to your wife lashon hara. Try to avoid talking about other people. Anybody. Talk about things. And because you don't talk about people, leaves more time, like Brent says, leaves more time to talk about. So write it. Talk about anything you want. Talk about sports. Talk about politics. Talk about anything you want. Always try to put things in a thorough perspective. But don't talk about people. Unless there's an absolute need. Don't gossip. Don't gossip. If there's an absolute need to talk about your child's teacher and hater, then maybe he's not giving your kid enough attention. So you need to talk about that sort of thing. Don't gossip for gossip's sake. The second thing you should never do with your wife, you should never put yourself down. Never put yourself down. Sometimes people talk to each other and say, you know what, I really don't feel like I'm good at anything. Because you're looking for somebody to say, oh no, you're so good. You know, you're fishing for somebody to build you up. Once in a while, okay, don't do it on a regular basis, especially not with your wife. A wife wants to feel she's looking up for her husband. It's crucial for a wife to feel she's looking up for her husband. So once in a while a husband says, you know, do you think maybe she's then, you know, the wife, but you don't like your wife, you just keep putting yourself down. So it's like a guy comes and says, you know what, the boss doesn't think I'm qualified. The boss thinks I'm a good for nothing. What? He's absolutely right. And he doesn't. And he barely knows yet. You know. And next thing you know, what you think? You know, next thing you know, you're one of those folks. Because the male ego, which is just out of control, is bruised because of what she said. The worst thing to talk about with your wife, they'll talk about people, and don't put yourself down. Don't put yourself down. You have to understand a woman has a very, very powerful need to that her husband should be looked up to as something. Something. Somebody should think something of her husband is incredibly important to her. I had a woman once, a couple of since divorced, but they had all sorts, both of them had problems. She had more problems than he did. But I was always giving cheer to the women in the neighborhood. So I mentioned that I was staying over as a parsha shiur, and I mentioned an idea which I saw in a sefer, which Mr. So-and-so had pointed out to me, the sefer. He told me there's a very good sefer to look at. He didn't even tell me the idea. He just told me there's an interesting sefer on the market. I bought the sefer. I found something interesting. I was giving over in the shiur. And I happened to say to the wife, to the women, that I got this idea from Mr. So-and-so. The woman came over to me afterwards. And she said to me, thank you for mentioning my husband's name in the shiur. Mm-hmm. Right? For me, but she just needs, people need that. People need to know that somebody, a husband's standing in the community. That's why women, it's important to a wife, has to be the leader of the community. You should be somebody who is respected, not honored necessarily, not honor for honor's sake. People should see you in the community as somebody significant. Very important for a wife. The husband, if you're a member of the community, you have a place in the shul, you're davening in the shul, you're part of the community, that somebody should see you. Not honor as you know, public acclaim. Not what she is. The man is looking for that. That's not what the wife is looking for. The wife is looking for just that you should be seen as a responsible, that she made a good choice in marrying you. She needs that reassurance because she suspects she didn't. And she needs to be confirmed constantly that people see that you were worth marrying. That's very important to the wife. Very important to the wife. Now, the other thing, so you don't talk about people, you don't talk, don't put yourself down. The best thing you talk to the wife about is compliments. You compliment your wife constantly. And the best thing you do is compliment her. She needs it. She needs to hear. A woman can give herself to her husband and family 24 hours a day. She's constantly thinking about her brother. She's cooking for them. She's cleaning for them. She's doing for them. And look what she does 24 hours a day. Isn't it remarkable? One of the Rabbanim once pointed out, look at how the world created the world. A woman goes into the kitchen. And she cooks and she peels and she bakes. She makes a meal. Her husband comes up. How long does it take her to make that meal?
2 hours.
2 hours to make a meal. Make a good meal. To make it 2 hours. Husband comes home. and he eats it. How long does it take him to eat it?
20 minutes.
20 minutes. 20. If he's hungry, down to 12. Right? Yeah. If he's rabid, you know, the meat's chasing the potatoes. Right? And he finished it. Right? It hardly takes 2 hours, so he could eat in 10 minutes. Right? You know what it's all for? Because when he finishes eating, he then says, "Thanks for a delicious meal." The whole thing was worth it. The 2 hours she put in is to, in his eating, is to get to the point where he says thank you and tightens the relationship. That's the whole point of the whole exercise. Right? What she puts into her family, what she puts into her kids, what she puts into cleaning, all she needs is the approval that people recognize her. All she's looking for is a little bit of recognition from her family more than anybody else. And if she gets the recognition from her family, she can do it forever. That's where we differ from the Western world as far as the woman's role. The women in the Western world started the feminist movement because they're sick and tired of taking advantage of the men. Because the men treated the women like a piece of meat. They don't appreciate what they're doing. And the women why should I do this for him? They treat me like garbage anyway. In a Torah home where a man genuinely recognizes that what his wife is doing is a difficult job, he acknowledges what she's doing, he tells her what he appreciates what she's doing, that fuels her. One person could change diapers and it's a chore. Another woman can change diapers. It's a labor of love. You know when it's a labor of love? It's not between her and the baby. When the husband shows he appreciates what he's doing, what she's doing. When he appreciates what she's doing, she can do it forever. A woman just said to me the other day, a good friend of my wife, she said, I haven't had to go to their house. She mentioned that she made a calculation recently of how many diapers she's changed. 10 or this woman says, I think she's got 10 kids. She made a calculation of the dead. She's well into the 10,000s of diapers over the course of the year that she's changed. Nice. I always go at it with her about who's got a harder job, men or women. So I just said to her, yeah, then again, your husband's paid for all those diapers. Right. She goes, well, I ain't. But at the end of the day, you know, if she can do it because her husband, I know her husband, he appreciates it. And if her husband genuinely appreciates it, her wife's fueled. Right? So what you need to do is you need to compliment your wife. Wife, women are very, very sensitive to their husband's compliments, to their husband more than anybody else. And everything she does, you should know, by the way, if you're not in a good mood when you come home, you're not in a good mood, no matter what's going on in her world, or what's going on in your world, if you're not in a good mood, the wife suspects her. If my wife's in a good mood, I rarely suspect it's me because I'm not even home. If my wife's not in a good mood, then either the kids got to her, or the other kids got to her, something got to her, right? Or you know, somebody said something, her mother said something, right? I wasn't even here, I'm innocent. A man comes into the house, he's not in a good mood. The wife immediately suspects something she's doing wrong. That's her nature. She's so focused on a man, she's so focused on the husband and what he thinks, that her mood is going to be dependent on how much you show your appreciation of her. Okay, that's number one. Number two, okay. Now the other issue is the issue of the any question on that? Any questions?
What you said not to speak less in public, but basically don't talk about other people. It was just random. I was on the bus today, you wouldn't believe what this guy did.
Yeah, that's fine, as long as it's not less than hard, because you don't know what you're talking about. That's fine, that's great. That's great. But you have to have, obviously, this is what you have to be careful of is that the total relationship is a very normal relationship between husband and wife. You know, the biggest rabbi in the world and his wife talk about triviality. Right? You got to talk about when you shop today. It's not like you think, oh, he's a big rug, therefore he and his wife must only speak about the parsha. You know, that's ridiculous. See, at the end of the day, she's a female, and you talk about all the trivialities of life, and you talk about Ramosha Feinstein once was, there's a story in the book on Ramosha Feinstein, he was going to leave the house, and his wife told him to change his shirt. Ramosha Feinstein. So he said, he can't wear that shirt. And he looked down at Ramosha with a big smile, you know, he's in his 80s already. So, looks okay to me. And he's smiling, and I said to his Talmud, I said, do you think I need to change my shirt? He's just joking around. And of course he went and changed his shirt. So his wife said so. Right? So even among the biggest, the biggest rabbi, right? So it's a very, it's got to be a natural relationship. It's got to be a very natural relationship. On the other hand, there's, you know, why get to a point, you know, what happens? I'm sure you've seen it in your own home. What happens when husband and wife talk to each other and they talk, 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 and eventually what happens? Eventually they're not good. I didn't say that. I didn't mean that. Well, you said, I didn't say, they can either argue about what he said or what he meant by what he said. Right? But eventually they get that argument. I can't believe it. You know, that's a, why get to that point? Why get, and you as a kid watch it and you think to yourself, well, that's never going to happen to me. Because the girl that I love, Lord Mary, I'm going to be so in love, right, that we're never going to bicker over things like that. Right? Have you not thought that? Didn't it cross your mind when you were a little kid? I'm just be so in love that we're never going to argue about that because I'm just going to give in on anything she says. Right? That's only because you haven't married her yet. Right? And as soon as you marry her, as soon as you marry her, you see the entire relationship changes. Then you, the more you're married, you become very, very conscious about how she thinks of you as well. Right? And therefore, the Torah says, why get to the point where you're going to bicker and say the wrong thing? Stop before that. That's it. Okay? Now, as far as the other thing, you were asking about Nagia before, right? The idea of Nagia. The principle I would tell you as far as for men, I want to tell you one principle, right? You do whatever you want with this, but I'll tell you one principle. If you keep Nagia, it's not lucky after you. The Torah is not a catalog. You know, people say, I remember in youth group, people say, are you Shomer? You know, are you Shomer Nagia? Well, you know, why don't you ask me if I eat right? You know, you get people who are from Shomer Shabbos home, ostensibly Torah observant Jews. I was in B'nai Akiva when I was growing up. In B'nai Akiva, you Shomer Nagia, not Shomer Nagia. You know, when did it become a catalog? You know, how ludicrous it is. Now, what I would tell you is like this. The way somebody thought my idea, but there's a lot of truth to it. In the Western world, a guy who's not Shomer Nagia, or a guy who's a standard Western college boy, whatever Western values are, eventually gets married. The way he sees his wife is a warden. Because up until now, he was free. And now she's in prison. Because up until now, I was living a life of Riley, playing the field, having a great time. And all of a sudden, he's married. Now, hey, now I'm in prison. She is putting me in prison. Because now I got to be loyal to her. A guy who's strictly Shomer Nagia, a guy who's lived a chaste life, and even if he's not been Shomer Nagia, but he is at least, even if he wasn't Shomer Nagia his entire life, but if he's playing by the rules, if he comes about tshuva and he makes a commitment to behaving like a good boy, and then he gets married, his wife is his liberator. The one guy gets married and sees his wife as the prisoner, the warden. The other guy gets married and sees his wife as a liberator. That's a completely different perspective of the entire relationship. And even within the relationship itself, there are still controls on it. Because in an area which is more than any other area, the most difficult area of life to control, and no rule. And no rule, no rule. You know, people don't know. People don't know what's considered right. In the Torah world, there are rules. And one of the rules is you have the laws of Nebuchadnezzar laws. A woman who menstruates, husband and wife are not allowed to have any, not only intimacy, there's no physical contact between them for the period of time, which is about a 2-week period. 12 to 14 days. Right? Because a woman, the way the halachas work, they're separated 12 to 14 days. Then a woman goes to the mikveh. If you have a couple, resumes their relationship. But what ends up happening is, there's a danger. If a woman is always permissible to her husband, you know what ends up happening? Anything that the husband does for the wife, she always has to suspect that there's an ulterior motive. There's always the suspicion of an ulterior motive in the relationship. Because being a man, there's only one ulterior motive that he's interested in. And even if it's no ulterior motive, at least she's got to suspect there is. Oh, honey, go pick this up, or go do this, or go mow the lawn, or whatever it is. And then she never knows if the only reason he's really doing it is because he needs to make use of her. In a Torah home, for 2 weeks, she knows that that can't be the motivation. For 2 weeks, they can't be good because they can't touch her. And therefore what he does there is he's treating her as a genuine person. And there are many people who will tell you that in the 2 weeks when the couple is not allowed to engage in intimacy, there's no physical contact, the relationship is a more personal relationship. It's a stronger relationship during the 2 off weeks than the 2 on weeks. Because during the 2 on weeks, the physical part of it climbs in and it always clouds the equation. And during the off week, if there is a relationship, well, it can't be anything physical. Then it's got to be something meaningful. You understand the difference? And that's why the relationship is, there's no touching, nothing. Because the slightest touch in the physical can end up leading to intimacy. It's complete separation. Right? And that's the brilliance of the needle laws. Right? And the needle laws is the backbone of the solidity of the Torah. The Gemara says, the Gemara says it's like getting married every month.
Yeah.
Exactly what the Gemara says. The husband and wife renew their relationship every month. The entire relationship does not get stale.
Same with old
dads
or kids.
Nothing.
Nothing.
The more if you do it, you ruin the whole thing. It's like saying, you know, you're gonna fast on Yom Kippur. You're gonna fast on Yom Kippur. You want to appreciate Yom Kippur, you got to fast on Yom Kippur. Well, I'm going to fast, but I nibble a little bit here and there. And you're not going to appreciate the fast. I can have sandwich, I can. And the Torah says that the idea is that any sort of physical contact immediately leads to problems. And therefore, simply recover. It takes maybe 5 minutes to get used to it. It becomes a natural part of life.
Do you have any good one-liners to say to someone who extends their hand to you, a woman in the street, or, you know, when you're still in business or whatever?
A woman who extends a hand to you, the best, what I found in that area, the best thing is simply to say to them, you know, I'm sorry, I don't shake hands with women. But, you know, that's all, that's all.
Because I found myself, like, getting into a cashier when that happened.
all you got to do, most people, you should know, most people will respect, even if they resent it. Even if they're like, what? You know, they respect you for it. They're the guy with principles. The guy with the principles. It's nice to see a man with principles. I'm going to tell you something. The women in the Western world, in their heart of hearts, they hate what's going on. In their heart of hearts, they can't stand it. The men love it. Guy comes up at college campus, hey, that's great. Yeah, the more the merrier. The woman is doing that because everybody's saying, well, you know, this is, you know, don't be so old-fashioned. They hate it. They hate it over and over. Why do you think the women dive into the punch bowl at the party? Like fish in water. Right? Because the only way they can justify what they're doing is by just getting out of it completely. Because if they think about it, you know, that's why the women on the campus, half of them are clinically depressed. Right? And the next day the girl says, I can't believe what I did. Oh, I don't believe it. Right? You drank the water of the punch like a fish, right? No. What were you expecting to happen? You know what? We discussed philosophy.
Very true. In my personal experience, women at parties are the most drunk, for sure.
They get drunk. And
they're the most drunk.
There's nothing. For sure. There's nothing in the world that's as attractive as a drunk woman, right? it is so distasteful. It is so distasteful. You can just throw up. You know, it's so distasteful. And the reason they do that is because they're going to be sober. That's why the women come off our campus. They're a wreck. They're a wreck. They've given away so much, they've got nothing left to give. The man? No big deal to me. Big deal. You know, now, the men are going to pay for it down the line, too, by the way. Men pay for it down the line, too. Unless you adopt some sort of restraint and live with restraint for at least a certain period of time, the past could haunt you. Because then you get married, for example, when I originally said, hey, you know, get married, and you know, you're comparing your wife to this, comparing her to that, comparing her to that. Like that. You know, these people who live from Bnei Brak and Meisharim will get married. You know, they've never dated, they've never had girlfriends. The guy gets married, well, I guess this is what it's supposed to be. It's a very healthy relationship. Hi, but he's never experienced the other thing. So what? So who's to say that your system is better? But you have experienced it. And now you've got this problem because now it's going to interfere with the relationship you have with your wife. You understand? And therefore, the less there is, the better. So if a person can't erase the past completely, but a person can certainly make a commitment to the future. And it's an investment in the future. And it's not an easy investment. But nothing worthwhile in life is ever easy. So if a person decides, you know what, I'm going to invest in the future and I make a commitment, then at the end of the day, a person reaps the benefits. There's a payoff. That's the way it works. All right, I'm going to stop. My voice is on the way out. Think about it.